there is a huge emotional component to illness. Huge. There was a research done by Harvard a few years ago that estimated that 80% of doctor's office visits are stress related.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. Hello and welcome to Trail Talk. This is Eric with Ultramarathon Mindset. I have a special guest tonight. I have been looking forward to this conversation for quite some time. I talked to Erin Perrigo. She just told me how to pronounce her name, Erin Perrigo. My wife saw her speak at an event and came home and handed me a business card and says, "You need to get to know this lady." And I put it off. It's one of those things, you know how when someone tells you to do something and you end up putting it off? I did that. And so that once I started this Facebook Live and the Facebook Live show that I've been doing weekly, I came to say, you know, I think she has something to offer for an audience of runners. And so and I didn't even know if she ran or if she had ever run before when I asked her to come on this and be part of this. And also just to say, I'm recording this for the podcast as well. Podcast has started. We've got 5 episodes up. So these conversations, if you don't get to see it live, and sometimes the replay is hard to see because you feel like you're stuck at your computer, you can download the episodes as a podcast and take them with you. So that being said, welcome, Erin. I wanted to welcome you to the show. And I didn't give you a very good introduction to say who you were and why. You are a health coach.
Health and life coach,
Health and life coach. Uh-huh. So tell me a little bit about I kind of have an idea of what a life coach is, but I don't know that many of the people who see this would know what a health coach is. So what does it?
Well, first of all, Eric, thank you for having me. Thank Brenda for introducing us to each other after she heard me speak. I'm happy to be here. And that's actually a really common question. What is a health coach? A lot more people have heard of life coaching. And basically, coaching is helping you get unstuck and moving towards your goals and figuring out ways to help you get what you want out of life or out of your health. And so my journey into that began in 2012. My father passed away 24 days after his cancer diagnosis.
Wow.
And we were all like traumatized and just shattered, and it was sudden, and his health just decreased so much in those 3 weeks. But about a week after he passed, my then 5-year-old daughter, she's 13 now, her name's Natalie, she was 5 at the time, she had her first night terror. And kids that age, it's not uncommon for them to have night terrors, but it was new for her. And my intuition just said, this is different. This is something going on. And her sleep just deteriorated from then. She was having regular night terrors. She was sleepwalking. Her sleep quality was just very poor. She started having raging temper tantrums. And I have a psychology degree and a master's in education, and I was a teacher for 10 years, and nothing I knew to do behaviorally was helping her. And so of course we were thinking it was grief. It was reaction to losing her grandfather. So we were going to grief groups and doing some counseling. And as the rest of us started to feel better, her symptoms just increased. So over about 2.5 to 3 years, she was having the sleep issues, these temper tantrums that really looked more like PTSD to me, but I didn't know at the time why that would be. Mm-hmm. She was having panic attacks, lights were too bright, sounds were too loud. Really having a lot of interpersonal skills, changes in what we were going to do. She had no flexibility. So if she knew we were going to go get ice cream later that night, but something else came up, her whole world would fall apart. She'd just fall into this screaming tantrum. Two, developing tics like you'd see with Tourette's. She was sniffing and blinking like that a lot. And in the end, she was actually hallucinating. She was seeing spiders and flies that weren't there.
Wow.
And so over time, I was taking her to her doctor, to other doctors, to therapists, to counselors. And really, the only thing anybody offered me was psychiatric medication. And my intuition, my mother's intuition, was telling me there is something going on with this kid. And we need to try other things. And with the sleep issues and with the psychology degree, I was like, oh, maybe she needs a sleep study. And her pediatrician thought that was too much. We didn't need to do that. He wasn't super helpful.
Give her drugs as well?
He never mentioned that. He referred me to other people that then suggested that. But I started to suspect maybe it was food intolerances. Her dad started CrossFit, and CrossFit and the paleo diet go hand in hand. Mm-hmm. And so I started reading, and I started reading about gut health and inflammation and all these different things that it could be. And no one really, her doctor was like, oh no, I don't believe in that. I don't think it could be food related. She's not having any digestive issues. There's the saying, when the student is ready, the teachers appear.
Mm-hmm.
And so a friend started seeing a functional medicine doctor and was talking about it at a mom's group I was in. I was like, does she see children? And she did. So,
You said a functional
functional medicine.
Functional medicine.
Which I can explain.
Okay, you can explain that later. Go on with your story. I don't want to drop that.
Yeah. So I took her to see this doctor. It was the first time I felt really listened to and really heard. And by this point, I had done enough research and enough reading on my own that I said to her, I'm like, I think she has leaky gut syndrome. And she looked at me and said, I like you. You do your research. I think you're right. So what had happened is that when Natalie was just 2 days old in the hospital, we were still in the hospital, she contracted a MRSA infection, MRSA. It's methicillin resistant staph. It's a drug resistant staph infection. Okay. Got it at the hospital and then ended up in Children's Mercy on 2 IV and 1 oral antibiotic right after being born.
Wow.
And with what we're learning and what is becoming more common knowledge about antibiotics and the microbiome and gut health, basically her microbiome was obliterated at birth. Mm-hmm. And they could not get her IV in at the hospital we were at. And so by the time we got to go up and see her quarantined in the NICU, she was black and blue from head to toe. And when we could finally see her, she was screaming in a way I hope to never hear another living being scream. And that is trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And so that began my learning about holistic health, the gut health, how gut health is related to mental health, how trauma is stored in the body. So we changed her diet. We did a gut healing protocol. She was had food sensitivities for quite a while. We still avoid dairy and gluten and a couple of other things. And then we ended up doing something called neurofeedback and some other trauma healing modalities as well.
Okay.
And now I have a happy, healthy, sassy middle child who's 13, plays soccer, straight A student, a happy girl. And we did it all holistically.
Okay. So give me a little bit of more depth of what functional medicine is. You kind of walked through and talked about how it was done holistically. I'm assuming that has something to do with what functional medicine is.
It can. Some functional medicine doctors incorporate, herbal protocols or different things, but basically functional medicine versus just going to a Western trained medical doctor, they look for the root cause of what's going on. So whereas you might go to your regular MD and have high blood pressure and they're like, well, here, take this statin, I'll give you a couple dietary suggestions. A functional medicine doctor digs deeper. They might run more blood work. They're looking for certain things that cause the high blood pressure or might cause certain symptom to show up. So for example, with my daughter, depression was one of her symptoms. Depression biologically can be driven by vitamin B12 deficiency is a huge cause for depression. Gut inflammation and gluten sensitivity can be another. Blood sugar imbalance. If your blood sugar is out of whack, that can cause depression symptoms, but inflammation is really highly connected to depression. And so they dig a little deeper to figure out why you're having the symptoms that you're having. And I've really come to understand symptoms not as the enemy. They're messengers our body tries to send us to say, hey, pay attention to me. There's something you need to look at, and don't dose me with ibuprofen. Don't take a bunch of antacids. There's a reason you feel this way.
So you how did you, I guess, deal with the gut issues, and how long did that take with your daughter? You said she had leaky gut and the biome, the bacteria was killed by the, so that, how do you get that back?
The microbiome, we have trillions of bacteria in our bodies. We are genetically more bacterial than we are human. We have more bacterial cells than we have human cells. And all the bacteria and the yeast and the fungus and everything that's in our digestive system helps us to not just digest our food. We tend to think of each body part as the heart pumps our blood, the brain does our thinking, the gut digests our food. But the gut's actually referred to as our second brain by many practitioners now. Many of our neurotransmitters are made in the gut. Other hormones and communication things are created in the gut that help communicate with other parts of the body. And so we want to keep that healthy. And antibiotics is one of the big things that can damage that balance. There's many medications that do. Eating a diet high in processed foods can damage that. And so leaky gut is basically when there is damage of the cell lining of the intestines that allows partially, like we're still talking really small particles, but they shouldn't be crossing the barrier into the bloodstream. And so these particles, these bacteria get through to the blood in the body, and then the immune system kicks in and it was like, we detect foreign invaders, but we're not sure where, because they're it's systemic inflammation.
Okay.
So acute inflammation, if you sprain your ankle, I've done it a couple times, you know, your ankle swells up, it gets warm to the touch, and over the course of a few days to a couple of weeks, that inflammation goes down. Your body's mobilizing to heal that part of your body. That's acute inflammation. It happens fast and it goes away quickly. Chronic inflammation is a lower grade, but it lasts for a longer period of time and can be system wide. And healing that requires that you remove whatever is damaging the gut in the first place. So she wasn't on any antibiotics or medications at the time that we found this out, which was good. So we didn't have to stop any medications, but there were foods that were contributing to this. And as you heal, you can reintroduce some of those foods. But she had a list of like 15 things that we had to take out of her diet to start with. Some foods are more inflammatory than others. And so we took those out. We started her on a probiotic that was prescribed by the functional medicine doctor we were seeing. We were doing a lot of bone broth. Bone broth is really healing for the digestive system. And with her stress level, because of the trauma at birth, I started doing a lot of trying to teach her how to meditate. We were doing some breath work exercises, anything to reduce the stress, because stress stress alone can cause leaky gut in people that are susceptible to it. And then when we started neurofeedback, that just helped reduce her stress level even more. And neurofeedback helps rewire brainwave patterns.
Okay.
So her brainwave patterns were out of whack because of the trauma that she had experienced at birth.
Describe a little bit more about neurofeedback. You say it rewires the brain, the brainwaves, but
yes.
What is neurofeedback?
It's fascinating to watch. I'm a total geek about all of this neuroscience and trauma healing modalities. But basically, there's electrodes placed on the skull with just like a sticky, almost like Vaseline. So It's completely non-invasive. And the therapist is sitting right next to the patient with a computer, and the computer, they are basically programming it to what they would like the brainwave pattern to look like. And as a patient, and I've done it myself as well, so I've experienced what this is like, you're basically playing a video game. It can look like Pac-Man. It can look like airplanes flying. There's several different ways that it can visually show up, but it's a visual representation of what's going on in the brain.
Okay.
And for anybody that's familiar with Pavlov and Pavlov's dogs, like Psychology 101, Pavlov trained dogs to salivate at the ringing of a bell by pairing the sound of the bell with food. So then eventually the dogs salivated just when the bell was ringing. And it's really that same kind of thing that's going on with neurofeedback. As the brain is doing what it's supposed to do, according to what the therapist has prescribed, the Pac-Man moves around the screen. You would get points like you get in a video game. A little ding or a bell goes off, and the therapist is providing verbal reinforcement for what's happening as well. And the brain just learns without you trying. And actually, if you try to make it do what you want it to do, it makes it worse. The brain just knows, oh, when I do this, I hear the bell, I get the points, the little Pac-Man moves. And when I don't do that, then nothing happens. It retrains itself what's going on. And with children are very neuroplastic. So 10 to 20 sessions can be really helpful for certain things.
Okay.
It's very helpful with anxiety, with ADHD.
Huh. So is it teaching the brain how to, is it thoughts or just of just brainwave patterns?
It's not thoughts. It's brainwave patterns.
Brainwave patterns. So,
but when you change the pattern of the brain, then it is easier to have those positive thoughts that you would like to create in your life. When she first went in, one of the assessments that they gave her based on her brainwave pattern, which was flip-flopped that of a typical human brainwave, she was basically in fight or flight all the time.
Wow, okay.
Which is why I thought her tantrums looked like PTSD. They were, but Bessel van der Kolk is a Dutch PTSD researcher. He's one of the top PTSD researchers. And he started noticing people coming to his PTSD trials that didn't fit the criteria. You have to remember what happened to you for it to be PTSD, according to the rules that they follow to diagnose someone. And obviously, Natalie couldn't remember what happened to her at a few days old. So he started calling that developmental trauma disorder. And so it's basically little kid PTSD.
Okay.
So that is why she was having those raging temper tantrums. She literally couldn't control her reactions. Her nervous system had been completely rewired. So any kind of affirmations or positive thinking, that would have been completely premature at that point. It wouldn't have been able to sink in. We had to deal with the trauma still running through her body, because our bodies hold on to trauma if we don't do something to dissipate it after the traumatic event.
Okay, so she had trauma when she was basically newborn.
Yeah.
And that stayed in her body?
Yeah, because imagine being 2 days old and you're straight out of the womb into this new, bright, crazy place you've never been before, getting poked over and over and over with needles.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah. So that, and then basically the body and the brain are wired together in that trauma.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. We tend to think of, a lot of mindset work and just, you just need to think positive thoughts and you just need to change your mindset about things. Through the vagus nerve, which connects the gut, the heart, and the brain. Vagus means wandering. Like, so I joke with my clients, what happens in Vegas does not stay in Vegas. When it comes to the vagus nerve, it goes everywhere. The body sends the brain 10 times more signals, messages, than the brain sends the body. Mm-hmm. So if we're dealing with unresolved trauma of any kind, it can be premature to start with mindset work. We might need to do some body things, some somatic things, to release the trauma from the body.
Mm-hmm. So is that then part of what you do as a health coach?
I do some of those things. Yes, I am. I am not a psychotherapist. I'm not an LCSW. And so we don't tend to, with my clients, dig into, analyzing the trauma, but more how do I deal, for example, if someone has stage fright, mm-hmm. There's a reason that they have stage fright. There's something that has happened in their past that has made it's a protective mechanism to not want to be seen or mm-hmm. to get up in front of mm-hmm. groups of large people. So instead of diving back into what that cause might be as a coach, I help people learn to sit with those sensations and get comfortable with the discomfort and then walk with it mm-hmm. to do whatever it is that they would like to do to befriend it, because that's really how we heal it. We mm-hmm. have to provide ourselves disproving situations where, oh, look, I got up in front of a group of people and it didn't kill me.
Okay.
And I'm going to do it over and over and over and over until my physiology learns I don't need to be afraid mm-hmm. to do this mm-hmm. anymore.
That's interesting. And just as you were talking, I was thinking, for most of my life, I had a fear of heights. Uh-huh. As a small child, and my mom thinks it was because when I was little, she held me up over a railing, and maybe she even sat me on the railing. I don't know.
It
was
okay.
It was long enough ago. Parents treated their children much differently 50 years ago. But it was something that I think scared me when I was a child. And that's something she's mentioned, because I had this fear of heights all my life. And when I was, in my 30s, a guy I met said, I can fix you. And he said, we went out to a cliff, and he strapped a harness and a rope on me and said, follow me. And I rappelled off of a 50-foot cliff. And it was very, very terrifying for me, is, just because the rope stretched. I mean, there was a lot of sensations but he just kept telling me, you're fine, you're fine. And I did it and did it once. And then I just went and did it over and over and over again that day. And it, what you talked about, the physiological, I used to lock up when I would get a, when I'd get uh-huh. into something high, my body would just almost freeze. And I just could barely move. And I still had, the feeling of the fear if I get up high, but I'm not physically locked up. I can deal
with
it. Yeah, I can. And usually it was rooftops. I mean, being on a roof. There were times, I was a homeowner, I had to get up on the roof to do something, and it was dangerous because I couldn't move. I was trying to, so fearful of it. So I take it that's kind of what you're talking about.
It is, because we tend to think of trauma as like these big experiences that people have, surviving a car accident, being assaulted, surviving 9/11, things like that. Trauma isn't an event. Trauma is what our bodies do in the aftermath of an event to protect us and to prevent whatever happened to us from happening again. So we're fully human and fully spirit at the same time, and we have to deal with the mammal parts of our bodies. Well, mammals, when they get into an unsafe situation, say the bear's coming over the hill, you're a hunter-gatherer sitting there eating your lunch and the bear's coming, well, everything in your body is going to mobilize to get you fight or flight. You either have to decide, you have to decide in a split second, am I going to fight the bear or am I going to flee the bear? Mm-hmm. And if you can't, then we freeze. That can be playing dead. It can be dissociating. So our bodies don't want us to know we're getting eaten by the bear. Mm-hmm. Our brains are kind to us, so it shuts us off. Mm-hmm. You often hear people that have been in accidents, they remember what happened immediately before, but then they don't remember the accident itself. That's the freeze response. Mm-hmm. And so as a small child sitting on that railing, your mom could have had her arms completely around you. You could have been completely safe, but to your mind, you're like, this is scary. And you went into that fight or fight, flight or freeze response. Mm-hmm. And without anybody to help you work through that, or even aware that that's what was going on internally for you, then you can carry that with you later into life. And it can show up as fear of heights. It could show up other ways as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and for me, it was something that, you know, I carried it for a long time, and and would probably still had I not run into this guy to put myself through that.
Well, what was your thought process, I'm curious, around agreeing to go do this experiment with him? Were you just so tired of being afraid of heights?
Brenda and I were, we were in the process of redoing our second home. And we did, uh-huh. I mean, that's how we got into the business we're doing, is we bought this house that was our parents called it the money pit. It was a very big house. And there were times, it was a two story house. I had to get up and do stuff on the, you know, on the outside on a high ladder. Uh-huh. And there was one time I got halfway up the ladder and turned around and went back down because it's just, I cannot get up that high. But it was something that was really, it was a block to things that I wanted to do, things I needed to do. Yeah. And so that was kind of the impetus behind it that made me say, okay, I'll do this. He described to me, you know, he'd been doing it. He was very experienced. He knew, you know, he worked for the Coast Guard. He rappelled out of helicopters. So,
okay.
It was not just like some random guy.
You were with the right person to help you through that fear.
If it had been Bubba from from the next county down, I don't know that I would have been so eager. And I still have I got my own equipment and went out and did it. It was something that that I continue to do just to kind of keep that going. It's still there. I'm not rock climbing, but I can get and it, I don't stand on the edge of a cliff. But it used to be I in a big tall building, I could not stand next to a window. So so I'm able to walk up to the edge of a window and look down and, you know, get out on a balcony, hotel balcony, 15, 20 stories up. It did work. So
that's great. And with like, when we think about our self-sabotaging behaviors, that's a lot of what I help my clients with, is whether it's health or whether it's something in their life, they've set a goal and they want to follow through and then they just don't for mm-hmm. whatever reason. And I have this saying with my clients, let's get curious, not judgmental. Because we can be so hard on ourselves. It's like, oh, I didn't exercise again today, or oh, I ate the piece of chocolate cake, or oh, I wanted to apply for that job, but I was just, you know, I don't think I know enough. And all those places that we hold ourselves back, mm-hmm. and we don't just go for it and do the things that we know we want to do. that there's becoming this wider and wider definition of trauma, because there's something in your nervous system that's holding you back from that in some way, usually, not always. And so being able to kind of dive in and look at those things. And in your case, you think you know where it started with your mom holding you over a railing. We don't actually need to know what the original cause of the fear is. It's being able to, in a measured way, like having you jump out of an airplane at the beginning of this probably wouldn't have been a good idea. But you took measured steps that felt doable. You were stretching yourself out of your comfort zone, feeling the sensations, being okay with those sensations. They weren't so much that they overrode your system. And little by little, as you've done it, then you've gotten more and more comfortable with it.
Yeah. And going through, you know, other emotions, you were talking about you're talking about walking through those things.
Yes.
And the, you know, the coach that I was working with, her comment was that, you know, teaching your body that you can feel any kind of emotion and walk through it and be okay and let that kind of settle and just, you know, not necessarily befriend it, but of accept it and let it come rather than resist it. And the saying is, whatever you resist tends to persist. And I've found that that when I, in a lot of what I do, and that was my strategy for a lot of my life was, I was taught to be unemotional. I was taught to be intellectual. And so emotions would come and I would resist. And I just had this whole pile of, of emotional things. But the amazing thing is, I mean, you know, maybe you can speak to this, is that when I allowed those negative emotions, especially when I allowed them to come and accepted and didn't try to resist, the power actually was less.
Yeah.
And so is that common in your experience?
It is. And I think culturally in the United States and Western culture in general, we do label, there's good emotions and bad emotions, or positive and negative. And so we throw this label on things like, it's wrong to be angry, or I don't want to be sad. Sad's not fun. Mm-hmm. So sad's not good. But we're human. So we experience all of that. It's just natural. And so the term that I use with my clients is, we want to feel them. We got to feel it to heal it. But we don't want to identify with it, meaning we don't want to become it. Mm-hmm. So people are like, I am depressed. And I try to get people to reframe that as, I am feeling depressed. I am not depressed. Mm-hmm. I have the capability of feeling this wide range of emotions. And it's okay if I'm depressed. It's okay if I am sad. It's okay if I'm angry right now. And as I said, with the physical symptoms, I see them as messengers. What's this telling me? Why do I feel sad today? Well, it could be a number of things that have happened. It could be you didn't sleep great the night before. It could be your blood sugar's out of whack today. Did you have a bunch of, is it the day after Halloween and you ate a bunch of candy the day before? What is the possible reason? And maybe you don't have any idea, and that's okay too. And just being comfortable with it and knowing that this too shall pass.
Mm-hmm. And that, speaking of passing, I had a thought I was going to ask, it just slipped away about the physical response, I guess, the way your mind and body work together, to allow that feeling to come, without resisting it.
Yeah. Like what happens when you don't do that physically? Is that what you're asking? There is a huge emotional component to illness. Huge. There was a research done by Harvard a few years ago that estimated that 80% of doctor's office visits are stress related.
80%?
80% of doctor's office visits are stress related. And the Western diseases that we see, obesity, being diabetic, heart disease, have huge emotional components and stress components to them as well. When we are under stress and we're not dealing with it in a way that is helpful to our bodies, that begins the disease process and can accelerate the disease process.
Okay.
So if we're not processing our feelings, our emotions, it absolutely can translate into illness.
Hmm. Now I remember what I was going to, I knew that it would come back to me. You were talking about identifying with your emotions, and I've said this to, I think I've said it on my page, and just whatever you say after the words I am matters. And
it does.
And so we get in such a habit of speech, but fortunately I had my mom and dad were very careful about the words they said, and not saying I'm sick or I'm getting a cold. That's the other thing, is like projecting into the future. You feel a little bit, of saying I'm getting the flu. You can actually, I think, bring on and create the things that you don't want by the words that you use. And so, I've even taken when I feel tired of not saying I'm tired, of just saying I feel this way, rather than identifying myself as being that thing.
Well, it's interesting in regards to health. Like all my friends, my kids will tell you, I'm always like, I don't get sick. Mm-hmm. Like I say that frequently. Oh, I don't get sick. Mm-hmm. If I drink out of one of their cups while they have a sniffle, oh, I don't get sick.
Yeah.
And guess what? I haven't gotten sick in a really long time. I have a lot of other lifestyle factors that contribute to that as well. But I completely agree with you when you kind of had a bad night of sleep and all day long, like, oh my gosh, I'm so tired. If you just rephrase that, of I am perking up as I go through the day, or I am feeling more and more energy course through my body, or trying to think of it in mm-hmm. a different way. Mm-hmm. It really is very helpful.
Yeah. And the thoughts and the words, my parents came at it from the church that we were involved with. There was a spiritual component to it as well, but it was very similar to what the New Age people are saying, come to now, of that, it was the word of, they call it the word of faith, having faith that the words you speak will, having the faith will actually manifest the, whatever it is you say.
Yeah.
And it works. And I've seen that it works positive and negative. And I was grateful that they had kind of given me that basis, because I'm not perfect at it, but it's something that I have been aware of for most of my life.
Well, and you bring up a good point about hearing all of that as a child, because going back to the brain waves, we have several different brain waves that our brains exhibit. And the theta brain wave is one that we're in when we're in meditation. It's mm-hmm. very open brain wave, and small children are in a primarily theta brain wave state up until the age of about 6 or 7. Mm-hmm. They're basically giant sponges. Mm-hmm. So they're taking on all the programming from their primary caregivers, from whatever media they're consuming, from the environment that they're in, and the messages that they're hearing are so very important. So as a child, you had parents that were super aware of that, and that's amazing. And so as adults, if maybe we didn't have that programming of what we heard and what we were exposed to, then it's going to be even more important for us to consciously choose thoughts that we're having. Mm-hmm. Because if you heard, oh, you're really not that smart as a kid, but you have all this proof in front of you that you were a great student, you're good at your job, you still may have to consciously choose the thought, I am smart, mm-hmm. I am intelligent, I can do this. And just knowing that there's a reason for why you might have some of those negative thoughts, but that you can rewire them and rewrite them. There's always room for healing. There's always growth possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I didn't, I picked up negative things as well. I mean, no, nobody, none of us are
oh no, all, no. All, we get all kinds of things.
So yeah, but and I had those, I had some negative things negative thought patterns that my parents never verbalized, but I picked them up. I learned it from just the way they behaved and just the yes. their attitude, a lot of unspoken things,
yes,
innuendos, and some of it was the interpretation story I gave to it wasn't the reason behind it. I have had a chance to ask my dad why he was so non-competitive, and he feared being competitive. He had this okay. he I could just, and I could feel him holding himself back, and the interpretation story I gave as a child was not at all his motivation for behind it. And we've been able to have that conversation, but it didn't matter yeah. what his reasons were. My story was the one I told myself, and it was like that was the story I had to go back and unwind.
Yeah. And we do that as humans, right? Our brains are pattern seekers. We want a story behind mm-hmm. whatever happened, why it happened. And so that's why when, you know, we may go in a room and people aren't talking to us right off the bat, if you're an introvert or you're very shy and it's hard for you to, you know, socialize and do those things anyway, and you get there and you're like, people just don't like me. And that's the story that we fall into that we've created around why people might not be talking to us. And that may not be the reason at all.
I wanted to ask, I guess, and I'm not sure I'll just ask this. As a health coach, the people that I'm talking to are ultra marathon runners. And so mm-hmm. they're you know, on a journey to improve their performance. What are some of the things that advice that you could give as a health coach to someone who is kind of pushing their body to those limits? I mean, of running, I mean, I am hanging out with people who think that it's, yeah. or who say that it's, think it's normal to run 100 miles. And, like when I said to my friends, I was like, I think I'm going to run 100 mile trail race next year. They're like, yeah, you can do that. That's perfectly.
And you said Brenda was like, do you really want to do that?
Yeah.
the human body is amazing and the human mind is amazing. We can push ourselves to do these miraculous things. Like Wim Hof is coming to mind. Right now, I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I'm familiar with him, and I've not studied his technique in depth, but I've seen.
Well, in a nutshell, he teaches breath work, breathing exercises, and some different ways to change your mind about things. And he, if you go to one of his retreats, you're going to end up doing like the polar bear plunge into icy cold water. And that's one of the things that you're working towards.
And he's not just jump in and jump out. You jump out and you're going to stay there for a while.
You're there. Yeah. But he's been like in ice water, and his mind, he's so good at biofeedback. He can keep his heart rate, his body temperature, all the things they're measuring. He can keep those normal for, I think it was like up to 2 hours he went at okay. one point submerged in ice water. So we are miraculous. We can do amazing things with our bodies and our minds. So I would never be like, oh, do you really want to be running 100 miles? Do you think that's really good? But how do you do that and take really good care of yourself?
Yes.
Rest. When you are not training, your recovery needs to be amazing. You need to be fueling your body with an anti-inflammatory, nutrient-dense diet as best you can. Sleeping. I mean, Olympic athletes sleep a lot. So as runners running that far, just the recovery needs to be spot on, and paying just as much attention to recovery as you are to the training aspect of it is just going to skyrocket your performance. I'm trying to think, Dr. Josh Axe wrote a book called Eat Dirt several years ago. And in the beginning, he talks about how he showed up to the US men's Olympic swimming team to become their nutritionist, to become their doctor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Michael Phelps eats thousands of calories a day when he's in training because he's a bigger guy and he's just working out so hard, but he was eating pastries and Donald's and just, you know, he's a young kid. He's just eating all this processed stuff. And Dr. Axe completely revamped their nutrition, completely revamped their recovery time, got them in a meditation practice, got them sleeping more. And if I recall, it's been a while since I read it, it didn't do much to increase their times, but their recovery sped up.
Okay.
So they were able to train more because their recovery was more efficient and they were refueling their bodies with everything that they needed.
So what do you talk about for recovery? For some runners, I mean, the idea is, oh, recovery is like, I'm going to run only 3 miles this time. I'll run 3 miles instead of six.
sleep, nutrition, mindset work, stress reduction. If you are, that'll be a big one, because if you are running that much, that's a lot of intense activity on the body. And so I've not looked into this, but I'm betting the cortisol levels is higher in ultra marathoners' bodies than it would be in, say, yoga practitioners or different things like that. And so anything that you can do to reduce stress, so whatever that might look like, many people don't like meditation and I understand that, but if that means you go dance instead of run, take a yoga class, or if it's a bubble bath every evening, or whatever you do that you like to do to relax and reduce stress is going to be super important.
Okay. And stress can be also physical stress. I mean, just as if you go out and do, you know, a hard run, and you come back and you feel, you may not even feel necessarily sore. I mean, because for runners who their body, if your body's used to that, I went out and ran Saturday and came back and was like, felt fine. I mean, it's like, I could go another round. And didn't feel sore muscles or anything. And so, but there is still, if you had that exertion for that long a time, there is going to be stress in your body.
Well, we have that cultural idea, no pain, no gain. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not pushing myself until it hurts or until I just can't go anymore, then I haven't pushed myself hard enough. But resting is a super huge component to keeping ourselves healthy. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about it, our ancestors or hunter-gatherers, they had short spurts of really intense activity and then they would come back to resting. They walked a lot. Mm-hmm. They're always foraging and searching for food. They were always moving, but that intense activity only occurred once in a while.
Right.
Maybe they had to move a big boulder out of the way. Maybe they were running away from a predator. Maybe they were chasing food that they were going to try to capture or to kill. And so that rest is incredibly important to reduce that stress level. If you're constantly at this high physical output, your cortisol levels are going to be higher, and high cortisol levels age us faster. They contribute to adrenal fatigue. There's all kinds of things you could be running and gaining weight and like, oh my gosh, why am I putting all this weight on? And it could be because your cortisol levels are too high.
And I know there's, I was the lady I was running with on Sunday. She said this same, and we both were comparing notes, and she's doing counting macros. And so she was trying to describe that as a diet. But she says she can't lose weight while she runs. And I was like, I can't either. I mean, it's like, if I don't watch my diet, I can be running, you know, a lot of miles and still gain weight. I talked to other people who it's like they eat just tons of crap and they just go out and run and it all goes away.
Well, and that comes to the idea of bio-individuality. And so I am not a dogma person at all. Like I mentioned the paleo diet earlier, because my ex was doing CrossFit at the time Natalie was sick. And we followed that template for a really long time. because it can be very anti-inflammatory, which is what Natalie needed. But when you look at cultures around the world, some cultures, like if you live in the Amazon rainforest, you're eating a lot of vegetation, a lot of plants, and a little bit of animal product. But if you're an Inuit, you're surviving mostly on fat and protein with very little vegetation. And both of those groups of people are going to be insanely healthy. Mm-hmm. It's really about figuring out what works best for your body and how to fuel it best for the activity that you're doing, while consuming minimally processed anti-inflammatory foods.
So give me an example of anti-inflammatory foods. I'm sure that there's like a list you can, I mean, if you do a Google search.
But, well, if fruits you, and vegetables, what, right off the top of the list.
Fruits and vegetables?
Yes. So, and again, not all of these foods work for everybody, but fruits and vegetables, pasture-raised meat. If you're going to consume meat, I'm a huge proponent that it's raised ethically and as clean as possible. So pasture-raised eggs. Some people do well with raw dairy products, nuts, seeds, things like that. Some very, very inflammatory foods. Some of the biggest ones, sugar is a big one. Mm-hmm. So if you're consuming a lot of sugar, that can create a lot of inflammation in
the body.
Does
honey qualify as the same?
Sugar is sugar. Sugar is sugar.
So right? Well, it doesn't matter.
There are more natural versions. Sugar would be one. Coconut sugar is another. Maple syrup. But it all turns to sugar in the bloodstream. Mm-hmm. Like some of it's metabolized a little slower than others. So that can be something to look into as well. But sugar is sugar. So you could be eating a ton of paleo treats and say, oh, but it's paleo, so I'm good. It's still sugar.
Still sugar, yeah.
Processed industrial oils are a big one.
Okay.
So corn oil, soybean oil, canola oil. Those are, like, I used to cook with canola oil. It was like, it says heart healthy right on the bottle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm doing well. It is very high in omega-6 fatty acids, and we need about a 1-to-1 ratio omega-6s to omega-3s. So if you're consuming a lot of omega-6 foods, I want to say canola oil, it's like a 12-to-1 ratio.
Oh, wow.
Omega-6s to omega-3s. That causes inflammation.
Okay.
So those oils, dairy products can be highly inflammatory. Corn can be highly inflammatory for some people.
Depends on your, depends on who you are. Is that?
It depends. Obviously, if you were raised in, you know, of Mexican descent, that was a staple food. Mm-hmm. And so, it might not be the same for you. But as a European didn't have corn, then that might not work so well. So really it's about figuring out, I always recommend if somebody's curious about this, doing an elimination diet. Mm-hmm. You basically, there's several different versions. Dr. Mark Hyman has one. The Whole 30 is another version of one. There's several different versions.
There's a new one, new guy on Facebook. Well, he's I don't know how new he is. He recently came across our family, Dr. Living Good.
Yes, I've heard of him as well.
And Brenda is doing his elimination diet.
Okay. There's several versions, or you just can simply, you're like, oh, I think dairy bothers me. Pull it out of your diet for 30 days mm-hmm. and see how you feel. Inflammation can show up in all kinds of ways. It can show up as skin issues. It can show up as, you know, your hands and your limbs feeling puffy, your joints feeling puffy. Maybe joint aches go away once you take certain mm-hmm. things out of your diet. Digestive issues are a sign of inflammation. There's so many. And Natalie's symptoms were all psychiatric in nature. She never once had tummy problems. She never once had issues using the bathroom or any of that. Hmm. All of her things showed up as mood and behavior related.
So it's interesting. So there were no physical problems. It appeared that everything was working normally. She was eating and, you know, but the root cause was still in her gut, but it showed up psychologically.
Yeah. A lot of skin issues are gut related. Eczema is a big one. Hmm. And people can Google, you know, signs of chronic inflammation, and there's huge lists of all the different things.
So leaky gut, is that a big contributor to then the general inflammation? Are there other things besides that that can cause systemic inflammation?
No, that is pretty much the big one. Yeah.
So diet is really kind of the thing to to give you.
It is. There's something in medical literature called evolutionary mismatch. And that's basically the idea that when you think about it, 100 years ago, our diet didn't look anything like it looks right now.
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't nearly as much processed food. People cooked at home. People were still working on farms and, you know, getting pretty much eating fresh food that they had cooked and rarely going out to eat. And in that amount of time, just over the last 100 years, which evolutionarily, when you look at our history, is like not even a blip. It's like such a short time span, but our lifestyles have changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
We eat so much processed food. We're on the go all the time. Food is available to us 24/7. It's not like we just eat breakfast, lunch, and dinner. People snack all day long and are drinking sugary drinks. Not just that, but we're not out in nature like we used to be. If you're running 100 miles, you're out in nature a lot. But even being like grounded to the soil, like having our bare feet on the earth,
mm-hmm.
the electric charge between the earth and between us is very healing. Sunlight, I mean, a lot of people put their sunglasses on the second that they go outside, if they even go outside that much. But then we're looking at our lovely blue light emitting devices mm-hmm. all day long, and it affects our circadian rhythm and our sleep cycle. And we're so stressed. We live in this go, go, go culture. And right now in the world, with we don't know what's going on with COVID, and is school going to start or is it not going to start?
Mm-hmm.
How long are we going to be wearing masks, and just all the questions. We have a lot of stress in our lives and not necessarily a lot of good coping mechanisms.
Right.
So evolutionarily, our bodies aren't designed. We haven't had time to catch up with all these changes and things that we're doing to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And which is why a lot of the people I know who run do that as a way to,
yes,
to get out and get some sun, move your body, be out in nature. I enjoy I was out today. It was on the trail, surrounded by trees, and that's my favorite place to run, is out in amongst the trees, rather than out on the road. So
I'd rather walk out in nature.
You talked about grounding. Is that something? I was one of the things that I had heard from a friend of mine, actually, and he was on this one of my first interviews dealing with depression, and his podcast is called Defeating Depression.
Okay.
And he said that one of the things that the tools that is in his toolbox for dealing with depression was grounding. And so I'd heard about it before, and then he said something about it. So I have been, since I've been running in sandals now this year, it's been pretty easy for me to just take my sandals off and be on the bare ground. And that there's people who say that helps reduce inflammation. Is that something you've experienced?
It does help reduce inflammation. It reduces the free radicals in our body, which has to do with electric charge in our body, because the earth has its own electric charge. And then we are, everything is energy. We are energetic beings. Our brain and our nervous system is an electrical system.
Mm-hmm.
They use the defibrillator, which is electricity, to shock somebody's heart if their heart has stopped beating. And so we are electrical, and there's all these chemical and electrical things happening within our system at all times. And so being connected skin to earth surface helps us to stabilize that electrical connection and reduce the free radicals mm-hmm. in our body. It's very, very healing.
What about the grounding mats? I mean, I've the people who talk about that, they have a mat that actually goes through the ground source of your house. Is that something that is?
I have heard mixed reviews about those. I try to go for good old Mother Nature whenever mm-hmm. I possibly possibly can. Because when you think about it, even like Native Americans, their shoes were made of deerskin, mm-hmm. or cultures, you know, previous to that. So it was a natural material. We walk around with rubber shoes, rubber soles on our shoes that are like super thick, like we're not making contact. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of different, just new in the last few years, gadgets and different things. There's grounding sheets mm-hmm. that you can get so you're sleeping grounded. There's the grounding mats. There's jewelry you can wear that kind of helps reduce EMFs in your environment and to ground your body. There's all kinds of things. Yeah.
I have a standing desk. And so I mm-hmm. have it's actually a strip of metal tape that's attached to the ground in the, uh-huh. you know, and so yeah, I have noticed a difference for being out with my feet on the ground, using the mat. I can't say that I'm doing anything. It's like, it feels, you know, like I think I am, but, and then, you know, that's the other thing. As a skeptic, I kind of look at that and goes, how much of a placebo effect is involved in that? And I think there's more to it than just the placebo effect. And so I've come to that.
And I think placebo effect gets a bum rap because
it doesn't mean it's not real. Yeah.
How powerful our minds work. Mm-hmm. If we think something is going to work and then it does, our minds did that. So that's really great proof that when you change your mindset, you start to see things differently, you can actually manifest a different outcome.
Yeah. And I know we talked before this call, we had talked about Dr. Joe Dispenza, and he wrote a book called You Are the Placebo. And if any of this is you know, if anyone is hearing this, that is an amazing book, because he goes through and talks about the power that our minds have to create basically the same pharmacological. I mean, our minds create real chemical responses in our body that are the same as what the drugs will do. And so, people who believe that they're taking the drug, the mind will create, even down to the side effects, and unpleasant side effects will come along because the brain, the mind believes that this that I'm taking is going to do that.
Well, another example of that is women can have phantom pregnancies. Like they have got it in their minds that I am pregnant, or they want a baby so badly that they've convinced themselves that they are pregnant. Mm-hmm. They will actually get larger and exhibit symptoms of pregnancy without being pregnant.
Wow. Yeah.
So yes, our minds are incredibly powerful.
Yeah, that is. So I didn't mean to minimize the fact of grounding by saying it was only placebo, but as the skeptic, I say, okay, where is this coming from? Is it my mind doing it, or is there actually something in having kind of, but I mean, I love the feel of my feet in the grass. So it's like, that's something that, that has benefit for.
And I feel like small children, they just instinctively know what's good for them. And how many little kids are like, I want to be barefoot. They want to run around outside barefoot. They just know that it's good for them.
Yeah. And well, I said that to Brenda, earlier. I think I can't remember what it was. She said something about, what do you want? I says, I want to be barefoot all year. I said, whatever lifestyle we're going to have, I would like to be able to be someplace where I can be barefoot, barefoot all year. And, so I'm working on it. I've got probably about 3 months of being, I don't think I've had shoes on more than a couple times in the last 3 months. So, we're getting time. I'll try to keep this to about an hour. So we're keeping that, and I don't want to keep you longer and impose on your time. Thanks a lot for the things that you've shared. And I know you've got, I know that you've probably got a whole list. You could probably go on for another couple of hours.
4 hours.
can you, if somebody would like to get in touch with you, what's the best way to touch base with you if they have questions, or if they want to think about having you as a health coach?
Yeah. Well, if they just want to get to know me and check me out on social media, my Instagram and Facebook pages are Erin Perrigo Coaching. And if they would like to reach out by email, it's erin@consciouslyhealthy.com. And my website's consciouslyhealthy.com.
Your website is consciouslyhealthy.com as well. So what are the kind of people that, you know, if they wouldn't know, if they would think like, well, maybe she could help, what are the kind of people that you are looking for to be able to help?
I kind of refer to myself now as a holistic life coach. And so the health part, holistic is looking at all parts of a person. Mm-hmm. So not just what you're eating, but you know, what's your relationship with your spirituality like? What's your relationship with yourself like? Do you like your job? Are you in a good relationship? What areas would you like to grow? Are you being creative? Are you allowing yourself to have fun and to play? Like, we look at all of those things. So I really want to help people who are going through transitions in life a lot of times, or are figuring out how to move to the next level and whatever they're doing and what might be keeping them blocked or stuck.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's good. Well, thank you a lot. I'm going to close this out. I'm going to, switch screens here and close this out. Awesome. And say goodbye to everybody. So, thanks a lot for being here. I really appreciated what you've had to share, and we didn't get to talk much about running, but I think that the things that you've shared, I think will be helpful for a lot of people out there who are runners. So,
and looking at, you know, healing in all sorts of ways is helpful, no matter what it is that we want to accomplish in life, whether that's running or getting a new job or, you know, having a baby or whatever it might be.
Yeah. And what you said, especially about runners, about the recovery process, mm-hmm. I know that, you know, ultra marathon runners tend to, you know, that the word ultra kind of gets in our psyche of like, oh, well, you know, I can run. So, and we had I had a guest on who named Heather Hart, who experienced burnout because the mindset of the ultra marathon runners is I'm tough. I can push through, I can do. And so she just was doing like 100-mile race every month and experienced a real burnout when her body just shut down and refused to, you know, and again, you said the symptoms, are just messengers. She ran headlong into that.
Yeah. It's like, forget it. I'm out.
And so she's now, you know, going to a balanced approach of backing off and being able to run for fun. And I know other people that I've talked to, we're all kind of trying to remember that running is supposed to be fun first. And the challenge and the reward of accomplishing something that you might have felt was impossible 2 or 3 years ago, or you're setting a goal that even feels impossible right now. There's a reward in that, but there's also to remember to enjoy that journey. And that's been something that's been coming back home to me this year as well. Just that it needs to be fun. The journey needs to be fun, not just the accomplishing the goal. So.
Well, and I'm wondering, this is coming to me right now, if looking at it, like each race you run is its own individual journey. It's not going to look exactly the same as the last race or the race before. And so seeing it like from a beginner's mindset of, what's this journey going to look like this time?
Yes. And for ultra marathons, if you're running, you know, 30 miles is kind of the beginning of the ultra marathon, going up to 100 or some even 200. There's things that you can't plan. I mean, you can plan for everything, but there's things that will happen. You'll show up. Happened to me twice. I showed up all the food that I'd planned on, that I'd done fine with through my training. Race day, I didn't want to eat it. It's like, I was 50 miles in, and as I was looking at this food, I'm like, I don't want any of this. and my crew was saying, you have to eat. And I'm like, I don't want any of this. So those are the kinds of things and I had to figure out what I was going to eat because it needed to have some calories or I would have not been able to go on. So.
Absolutely.
So, each race is a journey.
Awesome.
Okay. Thank you a lot, Erin. I appreciate it.
Yeah. And, thank you for having me, Erin. This has been wonderful. Yeah.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of Trail Talk. I hope that you found information that was helpful, maybe inspired you to think about ways that you can be more healthy. If you want to get in contact with Erin, her contact information is there. We'll also have it on the show notes on the website at theultramarathonmindset.com under the podcast page. Thanks for listening, and if you have not subscribed yet, I would like to ask and invite you to consider subscribing so that you don't miss anything new. And if you do have time, give us a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.